The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
It's time for Benny Thompson. It's time for LSU. It's time to out the traitors from January 6th.
It's time to shine a spotlight on those behind the coup. Broadcast on every channel except, of course, Fox News.
It's time to find the people who tried to hang Mike Pence. Wait till like Liz Cheney now. The world does not make sense.
Why don't we get things started?
Oh, most injurious, not securious, always hideous, most delicious. This is what we call the Jensen Show.
Oh, yeah. Late Show with Stephen Colbert. They know how to get the festivities started. Oh, my God. That was classic. I'll probably get copyright violated for it. But it was worth it. Wow. Welcome to the morning after. The morning after the first of the January 6th hearings. And wow is all I can say. I'm impressed. And for somebody who on every other day of the week truly despises Liz Cheney for her political stance, sure enough, heads up, we've detected copyrighted audio and video in your stream. Your stream may be temporarily blocked. Get over it. It's done. It was 40 seconds. Stop. All right. So anyway, Liz Cheney, I don't want to piss her off. Wow. She was great. And I'll tell you, they came out of the gate swinging last night. You know, Benny Thompson was good. I don't know, maybe I had low expectations. I don't know. But, you know, you listen to Liz Cheney, and she just cut right to the core of things. Actually, Benny Thompson did. He started with a little bit of historical perspective that I think was important to hear. Let's hear some of it.
I'm Benny Thompson, chairman of the January 6th, 2021 committee. I was born, raised, and still live in Bolton, Mississippi, a town with a population of 521, which is midway between Jackson and Vicksburg, Mississippi, and the Mississippi River. I'm from a part of the country where people justify the actions of slavery, the Ku Klux Klan, and lynching.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of that dark history as I hear voices today try and justify the actions of the insurrectionists on January 6th, 2021.
You go, Benny Thompson. So he laid out the historical stuff, and then when he was ready to launch in, he launched right in and immediately brought out the big guns. And by big guns, I'm talking about, oh, what? Why is that video not there? Well, I guess, see, you know, I have video ready to go, but I also have the backup audio. So first, the first person who appeared on that giant screen behind the dais where all the committee members were sitting was none other than Donald Trump's former Attorney General, Bill Barr.
I had three discussions with the president that I can recall. One was on November 23rd, one was on December 1st, and one was on December 14th. And I've been through sort of the give and take of those discussions. And in that context, I made it clear I did not agree with the idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was bullshit.
Bullshit
and,
is what he said.
You know, I didn't want to be a part of it. And that's one of the reasons that went into me deciding to leave when I did. I observed, I think it was on December 1st, that, you know, how can we, you can't live in a world where the incumbent administration stays in power based on its view, unsupported by specific evidence, that the election, that there was fraud in the election.
Yeah. So Bill Barr, in that very short clip, basically admitted that that Trump's claims were bullshit, that he told them, they told him his claims were bullshit, and that he quit as Attorney General due to the fact that Trump was pursuing this line of Oh, sorry. I thought wrong bank of sound there. This line of
bullshit.
There you go. It would help if I check the buttons before I start. So, you know, there were some, there were very few moments that I thought didn't live up to what they needed to get through, right? Didn't live up to the importance of the situation. And I'll tell you, again, Liz Cheney, she came out swinging, and she had some of the most important lines of the evening. And I'll tell you, this one, I'd love to be a fly on the wall of some of her, well, they're still her colleagues. She is still a member of the Republican Party. She is still part of the Republican House Caucus, although they ousted her from her role as caucus chair, I believe was her title. That's now, what's her name? Just that horrible woman whose name I'm drawing a blank on now, because I try not to think about people. I can picture her. You know who I'm talking about. Yeah, her. Anyway, Liz Cheney is still a Republican. And if you follow her votes, she votes with the rest of the caucus all the time. Now, Adam Kinzinger, the other Republican on the committee, is sort of in the middle. He votes with them on some horrible things. But for instance, on the gun bills, he voted the right way. Liz Cheney still voted with the maggots, just saying. That said, you can't help but applaud her for statements like this.
Tonight, I say this to my Republican colleagues who are defending the indefensible. There will come a day when Donald Trump is gone.
Yep.
But your dishonor will remain.
Ooh.
Finally, I ask all of our fellow Americans, as you watch our hearings over the coming weeks, please remember what's at stake. Remember the men and women who have fought and died so that we can live under the rule of law, not the rule of men.
Hello. I couldn't argue with anything she said last night, but that's good because she wasn't talking politics. This was not about politics. This was about our democracy. This was about defending the Constitution, and every single member of Congress swears an oath, not to the president, not to their political party, but to the Constitution, to defend and protect against enemies, foreign and domestic. And to watch, you know, during, they took a 10-minute break after the first hour about the first hour in which, Liz and Benny gave their opening statement. That's what it was. And then they took a 10-minute break. And I'm guessing that was a deal they cut with the networks so they could, if they wanted to squeeze in a commercial or two, they could. They could have some network time to do whatever they needed to do. And then they came back for another hour and they called witnesses. But politics did not come up unless during that break you happened to flip over to Fox. Now, we waited until after the top of the hour. So by 9 o'clock, it was already into Sean Insanity time and Fucker Carlson was already done. So I didn't see any of him. And that's a good thing because he literally makes my stomach turn. And I really didn't want to puke last night. But we turn on. So there's Hannity. So each one of them on the Fox Not News channel took quite a little bit of a different tact. I don't know what Fucker Carlson's was because I can't even think about him. Hannity, his whole thing was, again, for the minute or so I could stand watching, was, well, where was the National Guard? Why didn't Nancy Pelosi protect the Capitol? Well, it turns out that that's under Trump's jurisdiction, that he's the one who should have called in the National Guard. He should have called Mike Milley and said, do something, protect the Capitol. But that's not what he wanted to do. And ultimately, it was left to Mike Pence to do it. And one of the audio clips we heard was of Mike Milley explaining that he got a call from Mark Meadows, frantic, not about the attack on the Capitol, but you need to correct the perception that Mike Pence is in charge and calling the shots. And Mike Milley said that was politics and I had no patience for it and I hung up. He was waiting for someone to give him the order to protect the Capitol, and it never came. It wasn't Nancy Pelosi's place. I don't know who, you know, except Trump, and that didn't come. So, yes, and Diane in the chat rooms, only the president can call out the National Guard in D.C. So that was Hannity's line of fire, which was bullshit.
Bullshit.
Thank you. And so, you know, that was him. Then at 10 o'clock, when it ended, we turned on Laura Ingraham. And she might be the worst of all of them because she's so smug and smarmy. Well, actually, they're all smug and smarmy. What can I tell you? She's just reprehensible. And her thing was, it was boring. And, you know, they don't know how to do prime time. Those liberals, they don't know how to do it. And they're going to get their ratings handed to them. Well, think again, Miss Ingraham. Almost 20 million people, it's estimated, watched last night. And Fox Business got a boost in ratings because they carried the hearings. And Fox Not News, go figure, got hammered by CNN and MSNBC. So I guess the people want to see these hearings. We want to know what happened. We want to get to the bottom of this. And yet, you know, the Republicans just don't. First night, they're expecting about 2 weeks worth of hearings, right? The next one is going to be Monday, will not be in prime time, although they should rethink that based on the ratings, you know. But 10 a.m. Monday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, so that's 7 a.m. for you people out on the West Coast, just saying. You know, little early rising, never hurt anybody. But anyway, so 10 a.m. And one of the people who's going to be testifying on Monday, we've just learned, is an ex Fox Not News personality who, and again, I don't watch Fox, so I don't know these people, but he's now on News Nation. News Nation is the streaming channel, I believe, that's owned by Dan Abrams. He's the guy who owns Mediaite, right? And it's very, he tries to play it down the middle, but sometimes true colors show. You know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. But News Nation puts themselves out there. They purport to be nonpartisan. They purport to be objective journalists. I don't know. I haven't watched it. But this guy, Chris Steigerwalt, is now on. He's the political editor of News Nation. That's his current job. He used to work for Fox. And he was the guy who, I guess, did all their data stuff. And he's the one who called the election on Fox, not news, for Biden. Remember, Fox called it before the other networks did. And he came under a ton of criticism. And then he was fired. So he called the race for Biden. He was fired. And now he works at News Nation. And apparently this morning, he's on the air. He told his co-anchor. I'm guessing, again, I haven't seen this. I'm just reading. He told anchor Adrian Bankert that he's been called to testify before the January 6th committee on Monday. It says Steigerwalt has become a frequent and vociferous critic of his former employer and its handling of the January 6th attack on the Capitol. And now he'll take the witness chair at the bombshell hearings investigating that attack. On Friday morning's edition of News Nation's Mornings in America with Adrienne, Bankert asked for Steigerwalt's take on Thursday night's hearing. And what he said was, I should first disclose, I should say that I've been called to testify before this committee and I will do so on Monday. And so just in dull disclosure that said that before he launched into, I'm reading, a lengthy metaphor about a blind elephant. Okay, I guess he had to be there and I wasn't there. But that's happening Monday. They've not been upfront about releasing any witness list. So all we know about Monday is that this guy is going to be there. We've also learned that former acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen and former acting Deputy Attorney General Rich Donahue and former Assistant AG for the Office of Legal Counsel Steve Engel will all testify before the committee on Wednesday. And that's as far as we've gotten. So we have a hearing Wednesday, Monday at 10 a.m. We're off Tuesday, but it's primary day in Maine, Nevada, North Dakota, and South Carolina. So it's big primary day. And then on Wednesday, another hearing. And then if they hold to the original schedule they had put out, there's yet the fourth day on Thursday. And then they come back for a couple more the following week. But those are still up in the air. Now, I've got tons of audio, and I'm going to open the phone lines in a couple of minutes as well for your feedback, because I want to know what you think. I'll tell you, my favorite thing that I saw online this morning, and let me see if I can't find this tweet, because my system of keeping tweets is not the most scientific. But here you go. Somebody named Laurely Storm tweeted, "My now former Trump-supporting mom just texted me to say that she and my stepdad will never vote for a Republican again. Her and my stepdad literally stopped supporting Trump tonight, like within the past hour. Change is coming." She tweeted that out last night, about an hour after the hearing wrapped up. So I'm hoping that there are millions of others like Laurely Storm's parents. Now, there's a, we heard from Bill Barr, and we later on, I'll play you Ivanka's little appearance, but there's a piece in Rolling Stone magazine. Hold on, I got to get a phone number up on my thing, because I'm gonna call somebody. Rolling Stone magazine, who I guess is returning to a lot of political reporting. By Aswin Subasang, friend of the show, who used to work for The Daily Beast, who's now a political reporter for Rolling Stone, has an article. The headline reads, "Jared Kushner wasn't just involved in Trump's push to overturn 2020. He helped start it." So before I reach out, before I call Swin, I should call him now because he's waiting for our call right now. And we're going to call him, live on the air. But maybe when I have him on the line, and I bet he's there.
Hello.
Hey, Swin, it's Nicole Sandler calling. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there. First, I got to say congratulations on the move to Rolling Stone. I think that's a great move for you. I've been a fan of Rolling Stone's political reporting for many years. So maybe you can pick up the banner, that Hunter S. Thompson left behind or something.
First, I'll start with trying to pick up the banner that Tom Wolf and or PJ O'Rourke left behind, but we'll see what I can do.
Okay. Well, I think big, So anyway, last night we all watched, some 20 million of us watched, as the House Select Committee began presenting their case, and they brought out, we learned that they're going to use a lot of the footage from the depositions that they took. And one person we did get to hear from, albeit very briefly, was Jared Kushner, who he wasn't quite so helpful. Let me play really quickly the clip that they played with him. I'm not going to play the video. Here's the audio.
Jared, are you aware of instances where Pat Cipollone threatened to resign?
I kind of, like I said, my interest at that time was on trying to get as many pardons done. And I know that, he was always, to him and the team were always saying, oh, we're going to resign. We're not going to be here if this happens, if that happens. So I kind of took it up to just be whining, to be honest with you.
I hope he gets a little more helpful in some of the clips we're going to hear going forward. But
I would personally be a little bit careful of accusing any other adult people of whining when I have a voice and a face like that. But perhaps I'm getting a little bit too ad hominem there. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, you said it better than I did. He, of all people, should not be talking about others whining. And then I read your piece in Rolling Stone, and it seems that despite his protestations, Jared Kushner was very much involved in the big lie, not just in trying to get as many pardons through as possible, but hey, that's another avenue we maybe should be exploring, huh?
Well, and also when he said in that audio clip you just played that his priority was on the White House pardon operation,
yeah,
trying to get as many pardons as possible. I mean, that is factually incomplete, if I'm to be blunt. His primary motivation and priority at that time was to save his own skin and to try to preserve his image in as much of the public eye as he could. And we can expand more on that in a second. But to get to what you were saying earlier, Jared Kushner, to people who talk to him privately, he will basically want anybody in politics, in media, in elite society, whether in Florida or New York or anywhere else, or even potential investors, because he has this relatively new investment firm, to know his version of recent history. And that narrative that he and Ivanka Trump like to put forward, albeit not necessarily in a big splashy TV news interview or anything like that, mm-hmm. but what they would like to tell as many people as they feel comfortable with, again, including people in the mainstream press, albeit perhaps anonymously, is that, oh, all that deadly January 6th riot stuff and all the anti-democratic crusade that Trump and so many others waged in the months leading up to it, we had nothing to do with that. Don't pin that on us.
Right.
We're the moderating force, people. That's the narrative that the so-called power couple likes to put forward. And if you actually talk to people who are in the know and intimately involved with this thoroughly anti-democratic process at the time, they will paint a different portrait of events. Would you like me to get into what that?
Oh, please do.
Entails?
Yes.
Okay. So at the dawn of the, I guess what I called the crusade earlier, in the days, specifically the first week or week and a half right after Election Day 2020, when it became increasingly clear that then President Trump had clearly and decisively lost the presidential election to Democratic nominee Joe Biden, Trump's senior staff and administration brass, whether they worked in the White House or top envoys of his campaign, started huddling for days to figure out a path forward. They were game planning different court challenges and legal strategies and public relations maneuvers that they thought could help propel them forth to arguing over and over again, whether in court or in the public eye, that actually Donald Trump won the 2020 election. He, of course, did not. And that there is a path forward in terms of future vote counting and court challenges, et cetera, et cetera. A person who was in the room when these plans were first being incepted and formulated was Jared Kushner himself. He was happily, as far as people in the room could tell, overseeing it. He was playing a very active role, and he would brief his dad-in-law and therefore boss, then President Trump, on what was going on. He even specifically encouraged his father-in-law that there is a path forward and you should continue to explore and go down the paths of these legal strategies that we and the campaign lawyers and campaign brass are formulating for you. And this was going on for at least a week or a week and a half after the 2020 presidential election, and about a week after it was resoundingly clear that the race had been called for Biden.
Right.
And Kushner, during that window of time, did not urge Trump to do what you or I would call the right thing and concede. And he encouraged his father-in-law to do what Donald Trump already wanted to do, which was to fight on mm-hmm. and keep going.
Wow.
So that's what you'll get from a variety of sources who are in the room at the time, whether they like Jared Kushner or don't like Jared Kushner. If they're painting an accurate portrait of what was happening during those first 7 or 9 days or so, that is what you'll find out. Now, it is true that by the second or third week of the anti-democratic mission that Trump, Giuliani, John Eastman, and all the others were going about on. Right. It's true that by that point in November, Jared Kushner had dramatically started to recede from the fight because the public relations baggage started to get too distasteful for him. He did not, he obviously did not publicly denounce what was going on. He did not lift a finger to try to stop it, but he had to look out for number one, which for him is, of course, Mr. Jared Kushner.
Right.
So if Jared and his buddies or certain family members or his wife are trying to push a narrative in public, in private, or in certain corners of the media, as some of them, I know for a fact, clearly are trying to and have been for the past year of public relations whitewash or whatever you want to call it, that this is on them and it's not on me, Jared Kushner, or my wife, Ivanka Trump. That is wrong in so many ways, in so many different shades. And as the historical record gets written more and more and more on that historic and incredibly tumultuous time in American politics, I believe that it is important to set the record straight on that and not allow the Jared Kushners of the world to say this was everybody else's fault
right.
but mine.
Right.
No, he wasn't just directly involved in this stuff. He helped start what became the Rudy Giuliani led efforts that got more and more and more ostentatiously outrageous. So he wasn't a part of all of that, but he did, objectively speaking, helped lay the important groundwork for it.
Right.
So at this point, if we're talking about is Jared Kushner complicit, is he not complicit, I would argue, as you can tell from the tone of my voice and also what I'm saying, the answer is obviously yes, 1,000% yes, he was. But even if you're trying to quibble with the timeline of when he bailed on the mission versus when he didn't, that to me is a distinction without a difference.
Uh-huh.
If I am present for the planning of a bank robbery or the planning of the earlier stages of the bank robbery, but I'm not around for the actual crime, does that sound exculpatory to you?
Right. No, no, not at all. You're involved. You're involved. Jared seems to want everything his way. And I love this at the end of the piece in Rolling Stone that I'll link to on the blog where I post today's show. You write that after that clip aired last night in the hearing, that the New York Times reported, quote, Mr. Kushner's words enraged Mr. Cipollone's former colleagues, many of whom traded messages as they complained to reporters and one another as the hearing went on, that the former president's son-in-law was arrogant. That's one word I've heard, that's one word I've heard to describe Jared Kushner. It sounds like he's got, now his tone was totally different from Ivanka's, and Ivanka was robotic, as I'd expect. But here's, for those who didn't hear it, here's what Ivanka said here.
How did that affect your perspective about the election?
She was talking about William Barr. This came up after Bill Barr's statement where, you know, he said that the Trump's claims that he won the election were bullshit and that he quit, actually, because of that he wasn't going to go there. And so Ivanka was then asked this.
How did that affect your perspective about the election when Attorney General Barr made that statement?
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he said, was saying.
And apparently that set all daddy off. And he tweeted throwing her under the bus like, oh, she checked out. She was just trying to cover for whatever. He made an excuse for her, but at the same time criticized her. What is up with this couple?
I think one prism through which you can analyze how they operate both behind the scenes and in public fora is that first and foremost, their ideology isn't right of center. It isn't far right. It isn't hard left.
Do they have an ideology? Trump doesn't.
Right. It isn't anything like that. It is an ideology of self-interest and self-preservation. And what that leads to in practice for the two of them is so often, whether it was in the process of policymaking or politicking in the West Wing when they worked there, or whether it has to do with now when they and other leading members of Trump world are under the heat of things like January 6th investigations. Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump very much want to have it both ways.
Oh,
they want to still be in the tent as people who, even though folks like Jared Kushner may not be as close to Trump now as he used to be, particularly during the 4 years of the administration, they still want to be confidants
right.
to the former President Trump. They still want to be important advisors, especially if they ever need each other again. If and when, for instance, Donald Trump decides to run for the presidency again in 2024. But at the same time, they want to maintain some sort of veneer of, I don't know if distance is the right word, but for them to say, whether they're winking or nodding or whatever, that, oh, we are vaguely more reasonable than the Mad King,
who we've
all seen act in
politics. They tried to push that for the 4 years that they were in the White House with the Mad King, and it didn't work then. It's not going to work now. Swin, one last thing I want to ask you about is the final paragraph of this article, which I think there should be consequences for Jared Kushner for all of what he did or didn't do, because there are many things during those 4 years. But what you wrote is, since leaving office in January, Kushner has kept a low profile and launched a new investment firm, Affinity Partners. But the fund has once again landed him in the crosshairs of congressional investigators. In April, the House Oversight Committee demanded documents from Kushner and his firm as part of what it said was an investigation. Here's the sticky part, into whether Kushner improperly secured a $2 billion investment for the fund from Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman based on his former role in the government. Yeah, that to me sounds pretty important.
Yeah, and look, like, how often were critics of the Trump administration made fun of for being hysterical when they would talk about how historically and rancidly corrupt and or corrupt seeming the ongoings of the upper echelons of the Trump White House or the Trump administration were at the time. And look, you could see it and feel it playing out in plain sight during the 4 years of the Trump presidency. I mean, anybody who would dub an analysis of that as hysterical doesn't have that much credibility, in my opinion. But even after the Trump era is officially over, these things keep trickling out that just underscore, okay, if it isn't really, really bad, it at least has the appearance of something really grotesque. And in this sense, it's folks like Jared Kushner and Steven Mnuchin, two heavy hitters of the Trump administration, who are starting up this, who have started up this investment fund, and for the past year have been seeking investors, including from foreign sources. And a bunch of those foreign sources seem to intersect with contacts who they were close to and did favors for from the heights of executive power when Jared Kushner's father-in-law was the leader of the free world.
Yep.
And a normal person is supposed to look at that and shrug it off as not corrupt. Give me a break.
No. And on top of that, there's that other question. And I don't know if this has to do with the $2 billion investment, but he had that mortgage, that building, 666 Fifth Avenue, hanging over his head. And all of a sudden, it's a non-issue that it's been paid off. It was so underwater. This could have brought the whole empire toppling down. And now, what, it was mysteriously financed?
Right. And on top of this, and I know we got to go soon, but we could do an entire segment or, in fact, an entire hour of your show just on the multiple investigations currently going on into the Trump organization.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, that's just the tip of the iceberg. We could go on and on and on. Trump and his inner circle are going to be hit with various investigations and lawsuits and litigation for a long, 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 long time.
Good.
Mostly for entirely legitimate purposes.
Gotcha. Well, Aswin Subasang, I look forward to reading more of your work over at Rolling Stone. People can still follow you on Twitter at @swin24. Thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations on the gig. I'm excited to read you over there.
Stay cool.
Okay,
thank you,
you too.
So much.
Bye-bye. All right. So, yeah, I wanted to check in with Swin because he's covering this for Rolling Stone, and it's not behind a paywall, so you can read his stuff, unlike when he was at the Daily Beast. Anyway, phone lines are open. Should you care to weigh in on what happened in the hearing yesterday and what's still to come, 954-889-6410 or Skype to Nicole Sandler. Just keep in mind that I work without a producer. I answer the phones as they come. So, you know, you got to be quick on the draw when someone hangs up. But anyway, I want to share with you some of the other clips. I mentioned that Liz Cheney was on fire, and she presented, you know, she I was wondering after watching her if she was a lawyer, and indeed she is. She, you know, be a good prosecutor, though I wouldn't want to be up against her. But here, she basically laid out the case. This is what they are going to show you over the course of the next 2 weeks and 6 or 7 or however many hearings they have.
We will focus on President Trump's efforts to pressure Vice President Mike Pence to refuse to count electoral votes on January 6th. Vice President Pence has spoken publicly about this.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election.
That's
the presidency
right.
belongs to the American people and the American people alone. And frankly, there is no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the American president.
What President Trump demanded that Mike Pence do wasn't just wrong. It was illegal and it was unconstitutional. You will hear this in great detail from the vice president's former general counsel. Witnesses in these hearings will explain how the former vice president and his staff informed President Trump over and over again that what he was pressuring Mike Pence to do was illegal. As you will hear, President Trump engaged in a relentless effort to pressure Pence, both in private and in public. You will see the evidence of that pressure from multiple witnesses, live and on video.
Yeah, baby. Bring them on. Okay. First call is actually in person. Yes, David?
First of all, once again, I would like to say fuck Mike Pence. He is trying to come off as this heroic figure, and he was doing everything in his power to bend over and do exactly what the lard father wanted him to do. That's number one. Number two, you and I were talking during the hearing last night and saying how long will it take for Republicans to be talking about the fact that they were using teleprompters.
Oh,
and there was a long string started by Jason Chaffetz, of all people, about them using teleprompters.
Oh, my God.
Next, I would like to repeat the following quote.
Yes.
Extremism in the pursuit of liberty is not a vice. That was said in 1964 by Barry Goldwater. That is the mantra that these shit stains are following. These are not normal people. These are people who are, they're zealots.
Yeah.
There's no difference in their perspective, and the Taliban or any of these other people that are willing to be suicide bombers, and they believe they are involved in a fucking holy war.
Mm-hmm.
That Jesus is telling them that they've got to save the babies, they've got to stop the immigrants, they've got to, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this is what their goal is. And they will not let anything stop them. Fuck the laws, fuck everything else. They don't give a shit about the Constitution of the rest of the country. They will do everything in their power to achieve their goals. They are a lost fucking cause. And any effort made by any Democratic candidate to try to reach these people is a complete and total utter waste of time.
Well, that's one of my biggest criticisms of Joe Biden, which is he should have learned. Obama should have learned, but never did. And then Joe Biden comes in office like, oh, well, I'm not going to play that game again. He's playing the same game, thinking he's going to get Republican support for anything he does.
What about the epiphany, Nicole?
What epiphany?
You forgot about the Republican epiphany.
Which was?
Which was they would have an epiphany once Joe Biden was elected.
Oh, you're right.
Joe from Scranton would be able to talk to them, you know, man to man, like fellow, you know, blue collar origin people would.
Yeah, good. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's hard to go from that into more praising of Liz Cheney. But again, this is the whole committee I'm praising here because, you know, last night it was the Liz Benny show. But in subsequent hearings, other members of the committee are going to take on, you know, leading the questioning or the presentation of the evidence that they're showing. There was a lot of news made last night, and this might have been the biggest one of all. Okay, Lizzie, here, take it away.
As we present these initial findings, keep two points in mind. First, our investigation is still ongoing. So what we make public here will not be the complete set of information we will ultimately disclose. And second, the Department of Justice is currently working with cooperating witnesses and has disclosed to date only some of the information it has identified from encrypted communications and other sources. On December 18th, 2020,
check this out.
A group including General Michael Flynn, Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, and others visited the White House. They stayed late into the evening. We know that the group discussed a number of dramatic steps, including having the military seize voting machines and potentially rerun elections. You will also hear that President Trump met with that group alone for a period of time before White House lawyers and other staff discovered the group was there and rushed to intervene. A little more than an hour after Ms. Powell, Mr. Giuliani, General Flynn, and the others finally left the White House, President Trump sent the tweet on the screen now, telling people to come to Washington on January 6th. Be there, he instructed them. We'll be wild.
We'll be wild. We all remember that tweet. We didn't know that it came an hour. An hour after this clandestine meeting at the White House with the orange maniac, Michael Flynn, Sidney Powell, and Rudy Giuliani. Oh my God, what a gathering of minds. The brain power in that room. And then and the lawyers, when they realized that these people were all in the room together plotting, they freaked out and they ran in and broke it up. Okay, well, I didn't pot that thing down, so let's get our first call of the day. Hi, who's this?
This is Proud Skell in Alabama.
Hey, Proud Skell in Alabama. What'd you think of the hearings last night?
I thought it was good, but I think it's more interesting to note what's happening behind the scenes. And my feeling is Merrick Garland is being very quiet about this, especially with the links to the people that did this and the Republican Attorney General's Association, which is most concerning because I think he's being cautious because this probably involves a number of political candidates involved in elections across the country.
Okay. Go ahead. Keep going.
Is Mo Brooks.
Mo Brooks?
It's Mo Brooks.
Okay.
Who is running for Senate here in Alabama.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Garland is keeping a low profile of all this because there's information about the attorneys generals throughout the country in Mo Brooks.
I don't know. Frankly, I don't know the answer to that. Don't know. I guess we wait and find out. There's a lot we don't know. They could go down so many different roads of exploration in this quest. And I guess we're going to have to wait and see where they bring us. And so that could be one thing. I haven't heard Mo Brooks' name mentioned lately, but I have heard a number of them like Gosar and Biggs and the people who were in on the planning. I don't know if Mo Brooks was or not. I guess we wait and find out. In the meantime, Proud Skell, your job, should you care to accept it, is to make sure Mo Brooks does not get elected to the Senate there in Alabama.
That's going to be a tough one. And I do think that I'm glad that the ratings on this, as Trump would say, are pretty big. And I think this is going to show some people, particularly in the Republican Party, about the error of their ways, and probably influence independents into not voting Republican or for the Trump type candidates.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And by the way, David just told me that on CNN, they've identified Mo Brooks as one of the many Republican members of Congress who tried to get a pardon, a blanket pardon. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I think I might have a point.
Yep, I think you do. All right, thanks. Thanks. Thanks, Pretzel. Phone lines are open. Feel free to weigh in. So we learned about that secret meeting, right? That was pretty damning. Now we find out there's this other guy who is one of the investigators working on it. He had some other breaking news. Like, check this out. Let's hear what he had to share.
My name is Marcus Childress.
Marcus Childress.
For the Select Committee to Investigate the January 6th Attack on the United States Capitol.
What do you want to call him? Give me a name.
White supremacist and right
boys.
White supremacist and right boys.
Stand back and stand by.
After he made this comment, Enrique Tarrio, then chairman of the Proud Boys, said on Parler, "Standing by, sir." During our investigation, we learned that this comment during the presidential debate actually led to an increase in membership from the Proud Boys.
Would you say that Proud Boys members increased after the stand back, stand by comment?
Exponentially. I'd say tripled, probably, with the potential for a lot more eventually.
And did you ever sell any stand back and stand by merchandise?
One of the vendors on my page actually beat me to it, but I wish I would have made a stand back, stand by shirt.
On December 19th, President Trump tweeted about the January 6th rally and told attendees, "Be there, we'll be wild." Many of the witnesses that we interviewed were inspired by the president's call and came to D.C. for January 6th. But the extremists, they took it a step further. They viewed this tweet as a call to arms. A day later, the Department of Justice describes how the Proud Boys created a chat called the Ministry of Self-Defense Leadership Chat. In this chat, the Proud Boys established a command structure in anticipation of coming back to D.C. on January 6th. The Department of Justice describes Mr. Tarrio coming into possession of a document called the 1776 Returns, which describes individuals occupying key buildings around the United States Capitol.
You hear this? He continues.
President called us to the Capitol. He wants us to make it wild. The goal was for the Oath Keepers to be called to duty so that they could keep the president in power, although President Trump had just lost the election. The committee learned that the Oath Keepers set up quick reaction forces outside of the city in Virginia where they stored arms. The goal of these quick reaction forces was to be on standby just in case President Trump invoked the Insurrection Act.
Did the Oath Keepers ever provide weapons to members?
I'm going to decline to answer that. Grounds.
That's the head Oath Keeper.
And due process grounds.
In footage obtained by the committee, we learned that on the night of January 5th, Enrique Tarrio and Stuart Rhodes met in a parking garage in Washington, D.C.
There's mutual respect there.
You hear that?
We're fighting the same fight, and I think that's what's important.
The committee learned that the Oath Keepers went into the Capitol through the east doors in two stack formations. The DOJ alleges that one of the stacks went into the Capitol looking for Speaker Pelosi, although they never found her. As the attack was unfolding, Mr. Tarrio took credit. In documents obtained by the Department of Justice, Mr. Tarrio said in an encrypted chat, "Make no mistake, and we did this."
Make no mistake, we did this. That was a quote from Enrique Tarrio, that at the time, the head of the Proud Boys. And then he showed video from a parking garage where Enrique Tarrio and his lieutenants met with the leaders of the Oath Keepers. They were coordinating. And the thing is, what they laid out last night were the facts that this was not a spontaneous escalation of this rally that got out of control. What we learned is that the Proud Boys were headed down to the White House, to the Capitol from the Ellipse by 10:30 in the morning. We learned this from the filmmaker, from the documentarian, who said he thought they were there to cover Trump speaking. Well, Trump didn't speak till like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but at 10:30 in the morning, they were already headed down to the Capitol to scope out where they could break through the security. And they got there and they found very little security. And that's when they took on Officer Caroline Edwards.
We're just as the best we could. We were just, you know, grappling over bike racks and trying to hold them as quick as possible. All of a sudden, I see movement to the left of me. And I turned, and it was Officer Sicknick with his head in his hands.
Who died the next day.
And he was ghostly pale, which I figured at that point that he had been sprayed, and I was concerned. My cop alarm bells went off, because if you get sprayed with pepper spray, you're going to turn red. He turned just about as pale as this sheet of paper. And so I looked back to see what had hit him, what had happened, and that's when I got sprayed in the eyes as well. I was taken to be decontaminated by another officer, but we didn't get the chance because we were then tear gassed.
Oh, my God. So this is the officer. She was the first one injured when they first came, when the Proud Boys came up on those bike racks. She and maybe four other Capitol Police that were standing there trying to, you know, guard the entryway. And she got pushed back, pushed. She fell back on the stairs, cracked her skull, suffered a concussion, blacked out. When she came to, she got up and went back to the front because they were so outnumbered to help. And she played medic, helping to tend to the medical needs of the other cops who were injured.
My breath catching in my throat because what I saw was just a war scene. It was something like I had seen out of the movies. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground, they were bleeding. They were throwing up. They were, I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood.
She was slipping in people's blood. Okay. Who's this calling from the 702 area code? Hello. You got to turn down the radio. I'm going to give you till 321. Hello, caller. All right. Sorry. When you call in, listen on the phone. If you're, listening on the radio, I'm not going to hear you. All right. We've only got a few minutes left. Let me share a couple more things. I know I've got, this is the one I want to play you. So, let's see. Hold on 1 second. Let me see if I can get the, okay. So, that's the one I already played. Okay. So here is, a part where, hold on. All right, our 702 caller is calling back. Is that you? Hello?
Yes.
Okay, hi. Who's this?
Hi, I'm Mark. Marcus from Las Vegas.
Marcus from Las Vegas. Hi, Marcus. So what did you think?
Yeah. Well, I thought this was, I'm responding to you and your guest.
Okay.
The new Rolling Stone reporter.
Yeah.
I want to compliment you both on going, you guys stole my thunder. You guys went there and the thing I wanted to say was that the Democrats, to think that they can compromise, which is all they seem to live for, is how we can compromise and appease these people, these zealots, these Christian fascists, as Michael and I like to call them, is to me, it just burns me. It just pisses me off and frustrates me to no end And this is how the Democrats always lose.
Yeah.
Right now, and so it's very, I think it's very important that he brought that out, that you brought that out, and that can't be emphasized enough. If Merrick Garland does not indict Trump and somebody, you know, then he needs to resign, and Biden won't call for it.
No, Biden won't call for it because he bends over backwards to avoid being Trump. But he needs to step up and take control, too, because he's perceived as being weak.
Exactly. Which is, once again, the essence of the Democratic Party leadership and what is exactly wrong and why we're in this situation to begin with. You know, this goes back to them. You know, how many Democrats voted for Scalia?
I don't recall, but more than should have.
It was a great number. He got overwhelming majority of votes in the Senate, you know, and Feinstein is one of those people.
Yeah, of course she is.
And, you know, so this compromise and this appeasement, this posture that they have of bending over backwards and bending over, dropping their pants and bending over forwards and, you know what I mean, to appease this extreme party, this fascist party, is what got us to where we are today.
Yep.
Now, and so let me just extend this for a second, if you don't mind. This guy that's pissed me off lately is, I think, Chris Murphy, the senator from
Connecticut.
Maryland.
Connecticut. He became a gun control advocate after Sandy Hook.
You know, so this guy... He's the Democrat, is that correct?
Yes, he is a Democrat.
Yes, okay, yes, he's the one. This guy seems to be the most important thing on his mind is how we can get 10 Republicans, you know, to support a gun bill. So what they've done, what he's done, as opposed to doing what needs to be done and what the overwhelming majority of Americans want done, he wants to, let's get what the Republicans want. So the Republicans, in typical fashion, have not given anything. They haven't given anything. They haven't accepted, you know, assault guns is off the table. I think possibly raising the age limit, that's off the table, background checks. So their red herring has always been mental health issues. This must be a nut. This must be somebody deranged, you know, these shooters, right?
Uh-huh.
And so that's a red herring. What they call a canard. And Chris Murphy has said, okay, well, let's give them that. Let's acknowledge that. Let's validate that canard, you know, that ploy. Let's validate that as something legitimate, and we'll give them that and call it a compromise.
Yeah. No,
call it a gun bill.
Marcus, I fully agree with you. Chris Murphy is so intent on getting a deal that he's willing to sign off on a package that does nothing. It will encourage states to strengthen their background checks. It will encourage them to enact red flag laws. It doesn't do anything. And a deal that does nothing, but they can say, hey, we came together in a kumbaya moment, is frankly bullshit. It's just bullshit.
Exactly. What they did with this, what happened with Obamacare.
Yes.
You know.
Well, but yes and no. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Next time, turn down the radio when you call.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right. All right. You take care.
Great work.
Thanks, Marcus. I appreciate it. All right. We're getting close to the end of the hour. I'm going to run just a couple of minutes long because there's a few more clips I want to get in. What he said is right. Merrick Garland is being given his case on a silver platter. Plus, if we listen to Marcy Wheeler, and I do, he's been building a case all along as well. But from what we heard last night, this all falls on Donald Trump. And here's a little compilation that they showed last night of all these insurrectionists, not rioters, they were insurrectionists, all saying the one and only reason they were there is because Donald Trump told them to go.
What really made me want to come was the fact that, you know, I had supported Trump all that time. I did believe, you know, that the election was being stolen. And Trump asked us to come.
He personally asked for us to come to D.C. that day. And I thought, for everything he's done for us,
If this is the only thing he's going to ask of me, I'll do it.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Did you call President Trump mentioning going to the Capitol during his speech?
Oh, yeah. So that's one of my disappointments. He said he was going to go with us, that he was going to be there.
Yep. I know why I was there, and that's because he called me there, and he laid out what is happening in our government. He laid it out.
But I remember Donald Trump telling people to be there, right? I mean, to support.
So you mentioned that the president asked you. Do you remember a specific message?
Basically, yeah, he asked for us to come to D.C., that big things are going to happen.
What got me interested, he said, I have something very important to say on January 6th or something like that, is what got me interested to be there.
You know, Trump has only asked me for two things. He asked me for my vote, and he asked me to come on January 6th.
Yeah. Hearing two, but that's how they ended it last night, with a message on the screen that says hearing two, June 13th, that's Monday, 10 a.m. Eastern. There is a case being made that this all goes back to Donald Trump. It started with him and it ends with him. And I hope to God, or I hope to dog, that Merrick Garland does the right thing here. You know, there's one other thing that I wanted to share. Let me try to get this one last video up, if I can do it quickly. The whole thing about Mike Pence, believe me, I'm no fan of Mike Pence's. He's an opportunist and a piece of shit, frankly, who had 4 years to stand up to Donald Trump, and he never did. He always just carried his water, even when he was being treated like the ugly stepchild that he apparently was. But listen to how Donald Trump threw him under the bus. While this riot, this insurrection is going on, the Capitol is under siege, Donald Trump sends out a tweet basically saying, go get him. And here's what happened.
Without objection, the chair declares the House in recess pursuant to Clause 12B of Rule 1.
Mike Pence didn't have
the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution, giving states a chance to certify a corrected set of facts, not the fraudulent or inaccurate ones which they were asked to previously certify. U.S. demands the truth.
See, this cretin read the tweet through a megaphone to the people out there storming the Capitol. And here's what happened immediately after. Hang Mike Pence. Hang Mike Pence. That's where that came from. And video was showing how the crowd stormed the Capitol again. The ones that were supposedly not storming the Capitol in the first place, they went in looking for Mike Pence, looking for Nancy Pelosi, climbing through halls screaming, Nancy, Nancy. And if you listen to Fucker Carlson, oh, it was just a little nothing that happened a year and a half ago, and they can't let it go. Hey, Tucker Carlson, I got a song for
you. I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. And with that, I'll let this video keep playing in the background, and we're done for the day. Let me just tell one other thing, because there's a little discussion going on in the chat room. And a couple of people have said, I don't like this Democrat bashing. If you're going to bash Democrats, I'm out of here. First of all, it's not bashing. If we can't criticize those who we support because they're not doing the job that we elected them to do, then we've got nothing. then what am I here for? If you don't want to hear me criticize Joe Biden when he doesn't do it right, if you don't want to hear me criticize Merrick Garland when he doesn't do it right, if you don't want to hear me criticize Chris Murphy if he negotiates a deal that gets nothing but does get 10 Republicans on it so they pass something, if it doesn't accomplish anything, I'm going to criticize him. And if you don't want to hear that, then maybe you shouldn't listen. That's all. It's my job, and I criticize because I care. You remind me of the people that used to bitch when I filled in for Randy Rhodes, when I would criticize Obama. God forbid I criticized their president. Well, he wasn't doing the right thing. And if you don't do the right thing, I'm going to call you out. And hopefully when you do the right thing, I will praise you. I would love nothing more than to praise the Democrats for the great job they're doing. Unfortunately, I haven't seen that in many, many, many years. Are they better than the Republicans? Without a doubt. There's no question or I wouldn't vote for them. But better than the other guy is not good enough. You heard what Howie Klein, what Howie reported, what Bernie Sanders said to Politico the other day. Saying we're better than they are is not good enough. You need to prove it. Anyway, on that note, I will say that this select committee hit it out of the ballpark last night. It was fucking awesome. And I can't wait until Monday. I only wish they weren't doing it at 10 a.m. I wish they were doing it in prime time again. And maybe based on the ratings, they'll do that again. Right now, the only thing they have scheduled for prime time, and it's only, you know, tentative, is the final hearing, which would be at 8 p.m. on Thursday, June 23rd. But that's not set in stone. Bring it back to prime time. You need the entire country hearing every word of this. But I will say, great job last night. Amazing job last night. And I can't wait to applaud you for what you do next to the committee. To the Republicans, well, I maybe listen and learn. And to Fox, you're not news. Stop calling yourself news because you're anything but a news channel. You're a propaganda channel. With that, have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Monday will be all about what happens on Monday afternoon. Okay? So we'll be there. Hopefully you'll be here. Yes. And Beckola, thank you. She said, we have to speak up. No co-signing BS. We do need suggestions, too. And that's where I get in trouble. It's all too much for me. That's why I listen to y'all. Thank you. Bella LaGrossi said, wow, just wow. Absolutely on the money and fair. We need to prove it. We are better. Respect to the committee. Never thought I'd have respect for a Cheney. Just shows we can disagree politically and still agree that the future of this country is on the line. And you can't let the insurrectionists and you can't let the guy who wants to be the next dictator win. We got to hold them to the rule of law. And I think this committee is doing a great job. Have a great weekend. Sorry if I offended you, but that's what I do. Don't mean to offend you, but I do. I will criticize when criticism is called for. And I'll praise when they earn it. Got it? Good. All right. I'll leave you with the news. I'll see you Monday. Thanks for listening, everyone.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
17 months after a mob of Donald Trump supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to prevent a peaceful transition of power, finally began a series of public hearings on Thursday night. In powerful opening statements, Chairman Benny Thompson and Vice Chair Liz Cheney immediately laid the groundwork, dispelling the big lie that was the basis for Trump to lure his most rabid followers to D.C. on January 6th to stop the election from being certified.
Those who invaded our Capitol and battled law enforcement for hours were motivated by what President Trump had told them, that the election was stolen and that he was the rightful president. President Trump summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack.
The first shocker came quickly.
I had three discussions with the president that I can recall. One was on November 23rd, one was on December 1st, and one was on December 14th. And in that context, I made it clear I did not agree with the idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was bullshit. I didn't want to be a part of it, and that's one of the reasons that went into me deciding to leave when I did.
Yeah, that was Trump's Attorney General, Bill Barr, stating unequivocally that Trump lost the election, and his cries of fraud were, in a word, BS. And to twist the knife just a bit.
How did that affect your perspective about the election when Attorney General Barr made that statement?
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he said, was saying.
Ivanka Trump admitted on video that she believed Barr. Right off the bat, we learned that the committee is holding Donald Trump personally responsible for using the big lie as the basis of everything that followed. Liz Cheney definitely laid out the game plan for this round of hearings.
We will focus on President Trump's efforts to pressure Vice President Mike Pence to refuse to count electoral votes on January 6th. Vice President Pence has spoken publicly about this.
But President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election. The presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone. And frankly, there is no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the American president.
What President Trump demanded that Mike Pence do wasn't just wrong. It was illegal and it was unconstitutional. You will hear this in great detail from the vice president's former general counsel. Witnesses in these hearings will explain how the former vice president and his staff informed President Trump over and over again that what he was pressuring Mike Pence to do was illegal. As you will hear, President Trump engaged in a relentless effort to pressure Pence, both in private and in public. You will see the evidence of that pressure from multiple witnesses, live and on video. You will hear that President Trump was yelling and, quote, really angry at advisors who told him he needed to be doing something more. And aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with this sentiment, quote, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence, quote, deserves it. As you hear this, all Americans should keep in mind this fact. On the morning of January 6th, President Donald Trump's intention was to remain president of the United States despite the lawful outcome of the 2020 election and in violation of his constitutional obligation to relinquish power. Over multiple months, Donald Trump oversaw and coordinated a sophisticated seven-part plan to overturn the presidential election and prevent the transfer of presidential power. In our hearings, you will see evidence of each element of this plan.
Thompson and Cheney dispelled the fake Republican narrative that it was a spontaneous attack, introducing the country to the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, and showing how Donald Trump's statements and tweets directly influenced their actions. We heard live testimony from filmmaker Nick Quested, who for some reason was embedded with the Proud Boys that day. His testimony that they didn't even stay for Trump's speech at the Ellipse, but headed to the Capitol hours before Trump even spoke, underscoring that this wasn't a spontaneous action.
January 6th was the culmination of an attempted coup, a brazen attempt, as one rioter put it shortly after January 6th, to overthrow the government. The violence was no accident. It represents Trump's last stand, most desperate chance to halt the transfer of power.
The hearing also featured interviews with several men charged for their participation who said that they came because Trump told them to.
What really made me want to come was the fact that, you know, I had supported Trump all that time. I did believe that the election was being stolen. And come was the fact that, you know, I had supported Trump.
Asked for us to come to D.C. that day. And I thought, for everything he's done for us, if this is the only thing he's going to ask of me, I'll do it.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Did you recall President Trump mentioning going to the Capitol during his speech?
Oh, yeah. So that's one of my disappointments. He said he was going to go with us, that he was going to be there.
I know why I was there, and that's because he called me there, and he laid out what is happening in our government. He laid it out.
But I remember Donald Trump telling people to be there, right? I mean, to support.
So you mentioned that the president asked you. Do you remember a specific message?
Basically, yeah, he asked for us to come to D.C., that big things are going to happen.
What got me interested, he said, I have something very important to say on January 6th or something like that. Is what got me interested to be there.
You know, Trump has only asked me for two things. He asked me for my vote, and he asked me to come on January 6th.
And the committee presented evidence that these groups took credit for the attack. The leader of the Proud Boys, Enrique Tarrio, saying in an encrypted text, quote, "Make no mistake, we did this." Tarrio and four of his top lieutenants were recently charged with seditious conspiracy. The leaders of the Oath Keepers have also been charged on the same counts. The next committee hearing comes Monday, beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.